The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Wolgamott, you have a motion for us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have had the opportunity to review the minutes from our April 9th, 2024 meeting, and I hereby move their adoption.
Representative Wolgamott moves the minutes of April 9th. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Wolgamott, your second motion.
Mr. Chair, I've also had the opportunity to review the minutes from our April 16th, 2024 meeting, and I would like to move that we adopt these minutes.
Representative Wolgamott moves the minutes of April 16th. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Those minutes are approved. Members are going to go through a series of discussions and motions today, so please pay attention. I'm going to start with nonpartisan staff walking us through the DE1 amendment. So in your packets, members, you have the DE1 amendment. Mr. Savory and Mr. Hopkins, I'm not sure which of you wants to go first, but proceed.
Chair and members, for the tape, Ken Savory, nonpartisan fiscal staff. I'll be walking you through the spreadsheet that was included in members' packets. It has a timestamp in the upper right-hand corner of 9:56 a.m. on the 15th of April, 2024. There's a handful of items for the Office of Higher Education. You'll see on line 7, the committee reviewed earlier the governor's proposal to cancel the ALS research grant and then reappropriate that in FY24. The language contained in the DE is slightly different than what was introduced in the governor's bill, but accomplishes the exact same intent. So from a financial standpoint, on line 7, you'll see the cancellation of the ALS research grant FY24, so a negative $19,604,000. This is a reduction to an appropriation that was made in a previous finance bill in in 2022. And you'll see the exact same amount on line 8, $19,604,000 being reappropriated for the same purpose in FY2024. Moving on further, there are two items that net to zero also. Line 9 is a reduction to the North Star Promise program of $5,040,000, happening one time. And then line 10 is an increase of the same amount to the Fostering Independence grant program of $5,040,000. Both of those increases and decreases occur once in FY25. Line 15, you'll see the $500,000 that is appropriated to the Head Start centers on college campuses. This is the bill that the committee heard previously, and that appropriation will go to Minnesota State as a one-time basis. And then in terms of the general fund impact, you'll see on line 35, the total net general fund impact of the DE is $500,000 from the general fund, which is the identical amount as proposed by the Ways and Means Committee via the budget resolution. Flipping over, there's a one item on the back. This is a non-general fund item. This is the language related to the governor's proposal for the multiple revisions of licensure and registration applications. This is line 39 of the spreadsheet, and it tracks to the special revenue fund as increased revenue. You'll see that increased revenue starting in FY25. It's $21,000 each fiscal year, and that extends into the tail. So $42,000 will detract for FY26 and 27. And chair and members, that concludes the spreadsheet.
Members, Mr. Savory pointed out that we had a target of $500,000. The motion will be to re-refer this bill to Ways and Means. We have met the target. We have not exceeded the target. So is there any discussion to the spreadsheet? Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a really quick question. So on line 39, I remember clearly what this was for. It's out-of-state colleges that are causing OHE a lot of headache, basically, that they're having multiple revisions. And their thought process behind that was so that they would have less of those. And so my concern is that we've got this 21,000 continuing when the intent of it is to actually reduce the behavior and thus reduce the fees. And I'm just wondering if that's an accurate way to look at it. Like, how far out into the tails are we expecting?
I think we'll have someone from the department come down and answer that. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dickie Oliver, Director of Government Relations and Community Engagement for the Office of Higher Education. Chair, Representative Rarick, my understanding, and this is more kind of maybe an MMB situation, is we have to estimate what the potential revenue that would be, and it's estimated based on the number of institutions that have had this problem. It doesn't mean that we'll bring in every year that amount of funding. It is meant to be a deterrent for institutions kind of constantly needing revisions on applications. So we had to have a projected estimate of what type of revenue that would bring in. That answers your question.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a special revenue fund. Where would the expenditures go?
Director Oliver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rarick, hoping I can answer your question. All of the fees go to the Licensing and Registration Department to do the work that they have to do. And I recall my colleague Andrew mentioning that it is extremely understaffed currently, and they have hired temp staff sometimes, so sometimes that funding goes to that. I think there's specific things in those statutes that talk about where the fee revenue and what it's supposed to be used for, and I don't have that in front of me right now, but I can follow up and provide you that.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would just hope that we don't rely on that, because the whole point of doing this is so that people would stop this behavior. Mm-hmm. So I understand maybe a one-time and then kind of trailing off, but I hope we're not depending on this revenue for anything in particular, because I hope it's not going to be there. I hope the behavior changes. So I just wanted to point that out and get a little more clarity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Director Oliver, you're ready to stop that misbehavior?
We'll
you don't
try.
Need to answer that, Director Oliver. That's fine. Any further questions to Representative Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a question about the transfer of money from the North Star Promise Program to the Foster and Independence Grant program, which I strongly support, and I'm glad to see this. When I offered a similar amendment on the floor, my understanding was there was a lot more money available, and I don't have my notes from the floor argument with me, but I thought there was $117 million in the North Star Promise program, and that the ongoing requirement of the program was like $49 million. Could you clarify that for me?
Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, current law dictates that the North Star Promise would receive $117 million, roughly, dollars in FY25 to be transferred to a special revenue fund account for the purposes of the program going forward. Then an additional year starting in FY26, North Star would receive $49.5 million in both 26 and 27 for the same transfer purpose to be put into that account. Your amendment changed the dollars in perpetuity, whereas this is a one-time change. So I think that is kind of the difference between your proposal and then the chair's proposal.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what was the shortfall in the Fostering Independence grants? Does this $5 million cover that?
Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, my understanding, based this number having been communicated by the Office of Higher Education, this would fulfill the need in FY25.
Representative Robbins, we met with the department several times and also with the Senate to make sure we had an accurate number.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm glad to see it's covered, but I hope, because there is that extra sort of $70 million in the North Star Promise program, that if there's a shortfall next year, we will revisit this, because I really think that's a good use of that money. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions on the spreadsheet? Seeing none, then Mr. Hopkins.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll review the contents of the DE1 amendment that's in everyone's packet. Section 1, this comes from House File 355, which the committee heard last year, and this affects the Higher Education Facilities Authority, which provides nonprofit private post-secondary institutions with conduit financing for capital projects. This increases the total value of outstanding bonds that the authority can issue from $1.3 billion to $2 billion. And the authority receives no state funding, and the bonds it issues do not constitute a debt of the state. Sections 2 to 4 come from House File 5299. These are the increased, these are the extra fees that OHE can issue for registration applicants, license applicants with multiple revisions or corrections on their applications. Since the committee last heard this language, in each of these sections, there's a new sentence at the end that excludes de minimis corrections from the additional fee. Section 5, this is the amendment to the existing ALS research appropriation. Since the committee last heard this language, rather than, and there will be an amendment to delete Section 8, the new ALS research appropriation. The way that Section 5 has been changed just extends the availability of the funds to June 30th, 2029, and makes all the changes that were originally in 5299 without requiring that additional Section 8 appropriation. So that will be deleted in a coming amendment. But Section 5 is that change to the existing appropriation for ALS research. Sections 6 and 7, shift that $5.04 million from the North Star Promise Program to the Fostering Independence Higher Education Grant Program. Section 8 is the extra appropriation for ALS that's going to be deleted in a forthcoming amendment. And finally, Section 9, this is from House File 3887, as amended by committee, and this is the $500,000 appropriation to Minnesota State for the Kids on Campus initiative.
Members, questions to the DE1? Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the effort by OHE to clarify how the application fees for renewals and when there's a lot of hand-holding required, how that is in there. I do have some concern, and I think it could be that maybe there's just some miscommunication about my understanding working with my constituents is that the fee would only apply if things weren't part of a completed education. So I wondered, does this fee apply only when new applications or annual renewals are submitted and not properly or fully completed?
Departments of higher ed, you want to come down and explain? Director Oliver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will do my best to explain. Unfortunately, my colleague Betsy Talbot is not here today to be able to answer your question more thoroughly. But Representative Robbins, yes and no. So majority of the corrections or in which this fee will apply is that first part of that sentence, the second part where it's that's why we clarify by saying initial. So anything subsequent to the first interaction. An example as far as the completed applications are where the agency has to constantly reach out to the institution to confirm or validate the completed application. And that's why that part is also in there for clarification. That's helpful.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. That's actually concerning. So I appreciate, though, that, you know, you're open to the discussion. So my understanding from previous discussions was that if they fully submitted a completed application and then OHE reached back or there was subsequent follow-up, as long as it was outside the scope of the fully completed application, they wouldn't be charged. So it concerns me that you say, well, it's the fees kick in after the initial interaction, because, you know, there are questions, especially, you know, as you're starting that process. So my understanding is that there are often follow-up or clarifying questions from OHE to colleges after the application has been fully or correctly submitted. So if the application is fully and correctly submitted and you still have follow-up questions, would the fee apply to those follow-up questions?
Director Oliver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, I don't want to misspeak because I do not run that department, but my understanding is it's outside of, like, reasonable communication. So I think there's forgive me for not having Betsy here. There are instances in which an institution where she has to continuously reach out to an institution to confirm and validate the completed application. So that's it's a limited situation, but it does happen. So I'm sorry, I can't give you more detail. I apologize.
Thank you. So just to clarify that, and I do wish Ms. Talbot was here, so maybe she could follow up with me directly. But given that the goal is to have fewer interactions like that, and I think the idea is to limit it to four, does OHE provide written instructions, guidelines, documentation requirements to the institutions? Is there like a standardized set of documents or policies like that where OHE sends out to every school saying, this is what it means to complete a complete application, so that they understand? Because my experience is that sometimes, you know, they get conflicting information, and so they're trying to respond and be in good faith, but it was because things aren't laid out clearly. So is there some sort of a set of documents about how to complete these applications?
Director Oliver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will have to have Betsy follow up with you. I believe there are instructions. All of this is like online. So there should be instructions provided to the institutions trying to complete applications. But I think the best thing would for me to have Betsy reach out to you and explain.
I appreciate that. And if she could send me that sort of initial set of policies, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Why don't you send it to all members of the committee so we're all fully informed?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Then we'll go to testifiers, and as long as Director Oliver's there, you might as well testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I did not get a chance to print out the commissioner's letter, and he does send his regrets for not being able to be here. He is out of town in D.C. currently, but you all will be getting a letter. I believe your committee administrator emailed it to you all, and it's just expressing our thank yous for including the governor's recommendation around budget, the extension for the ALS grants. And to that point, I do want to give an answer to a question that was asked when that bill was in front of you all. The other institutions that applied for that grant was Hennepin Healthcare and Health Partners, and there were four applications. So, just wanted to give our gratitude for you all including the fee language and your commitment to quality higher education in the state, and our great working relationship with you, Chair Plowski, and your staff. That is pretty much it. I will let you read his letter. I will not read the letter to you all, so I appreciate it. And cue confetti. I know this is your last hearing, so I did not bring cupcakes. I understand you hate food in committee, so yeah.
Director Oliver, I don't hate cupcakes, but I find it grossly inappropriate for members to eat in committee in front of people, and particularly when we are on the internet or TV. To listen or watch someone stuff their mouth publicly is embarrassing. And there are enough things that are embarrassing about this process without adding the consumption of food. So that's, cupcakes are fine. If you need to know which kind, I'll text you later.
But thank you.
All right. Thank you. I think Roger Moe is next. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski, members of the Higher Education Committee. My name is Roger Moe, and I am chair of the Board of Trustees for the Minnesota State College and University System. And like you, Mr. Chairman, I'm on the last couple of months of that chairmanship, and I am so happy that my 2 years as chair overlapped the last couple of years with all of you. It has been a wonderful journey together, and it's really been an honor. I'm here on behalf of the Chancellor as well as my colleagues on the Board of Trustees. My comments today are not going to reflect on the budget you're dealing with today, but on your past actions and how important that has been to not only our system, but to higher education in general. The time and the courtesy that you paid to our system and all of higher education is just has been outstanding. I want to thank you all. Many of you attended our breakfasts that we had during the session, and want to thank you for the advice and counsel that you gave during those the times that we spent together. The budget that you passed last year, again, I have to say thank you. Enrollment is up this semester for the first time in 10 years, and the projections for next fall, we're never certain exactly how many show up, but the projections now have it in double digits increase, and that is a direct result of your actions. So thank you so much for that. We have an ongoing partnership. As you know, you funded workforce development. We're in the process of raising that private money to meet the match that you require, and we will be doing that. Also, I want to extend an invitation. Commencements are coming up, and you're all invited to attend commencements in colleges and universities in your area or even out of your area, so feel free to do so. And members of the committee, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a couple of minutes to comment about your chair. This is his last meeting. 38 years. I know what kind of a commitment that is, and I'm proud to say that the chairman has been a friend of mine for 38 years. And no question about your emphasis on education in general, but your focus on higher education has been exemplary and dedication par excellence. So thank you for that. Thank you for your efforts on the model legislature. That has been a legacy that's going to last a long time. So thank you very much for that. And I know that just your comments about the cupcakes, it is such a refreshing candor that we all appreciate from you. And with that, let me just say, I know that you're going to continue to be extremely busy as the new executive director of the Flat Roof Society. So.
Anti-flat roof.
Right. Well, thank you very much for all your efforts.
So, Chairman, I want to thank you, too, for your work on the budget starting in 2022. Members don't know, but that budget was put together in the fall of 2022 before the election, before they knew who was controlling either the House or the Senate. And I appreciate being included in that discussion. And you'll note what he said about 10 years. It's been 10 years since we have had increases in enrollment. This committee did its work by budget. And I can't emphasize enough the lost art of budget work in this body. You don't hear bills. You hear budgets. And then when you thoroughly understand your budgets, you cherry pick those bills that address the needs of the budgets. And looking back 10 years by campus over those declining enrollments, I think framed perfectly the discussion that we needed to have on what type of budget needed to pass this body. I would hope in the future all of the members of this committee would say that we're not hearing any bills in January, February, or March. We're looking at the budgets by campus and by system, and then we'll decide what bills we need to put together to address the needs that come out of that discussion. It is a different way to do legislation. It was once upon a time the way we, all of our divisions, did it. It's the way I learned how to do it. I have to thank Lyndon Carlson, and if he were here, he'd go on a much longer speech than I would on how that was done. But the result is what is important. And when you fully understand the budgets, you can craft legislation that will stand the test of time. So I can't thank you enough, Chair Mo, for what's happened with MnState. And I want to make one comment about the model legislature. With the assistance of the MnState system, Metro State University will have a model legislature very similar to the one in Winona starting in December. We also are looking forward to one starting not this year, but perhaps next year at St. Cloud. And we're even looking at one starting in Mankato. Now, these are model legislatures, not mock legislatures. We're the mock one. They're the mock. And these are all nonpartisan. So we teach students public service. We teach them how to amend in committee, how to debate in committee, how to make sure they understand the process with our legislation. And they have their own House and Senate and governor. And this is the way civics should be taught, hands-on, using our material so they fully understand it, and not in a partisan way. So I can't thank you enough for helping promoting the one at Metro, and I'm looking forward to seeing that in December, and hopefully soon the one in St. Cloud and the other one at Mankato. So thank you very much. I appreciate
it. And thank you to all of you for the kindnesses you've shown me, and to you, Mr. Chairman, all the best in the future.
Thank you. Oh, we have a regent here, too. Regent Turner, I think, wants to come up and say a few words. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Regent Mary Turner, and I'm a newbie. I cannot possibly do a better job than what Chairman Moe did. But coming from the perspective of a newly into the higher ed world, for years I have fought the battles on the health, and now getting into higher ed, I can only say that Chairman Pawlowski, you have been such a mentor to me in the short time that I've done this, as has of a lot of you. But I want, on behalf of the Board of Regents and the university, I would like to thank you for your 38 years of service. And I take to heart everything that you say about how we should go forward, as far as whatever you just said about the budget and all that kind of stuff.
you shall say.
It okay. Makes sense coming from, as a frontline still working ICU nurse, I believe in seeing to the needs of my patients. And that's what we should be doing, is seeing to the needs of our students and the people of Minnesota and what they need to be able to get a higher education, to be able to if nothing else, fill out all of the work openings that are in all the healthcare fields. And so whatever you guys, what you've been doing to encourage people to get back and get their higher education so that someday I can retire. Because right now, nursing alone will be 34,000 nurses short in 2030 when I'm supposed to retire at the age of 70. And right now I don't think I can do that. So anything you guys can do to get people back into school and get higher ed is much appreciated. Thank you. And thank you.
And Regent Turner, it's refreshing to see a regent of the University of Minnesota repetitively attending our committee hearings and then also visiting with our members.
Yep.
I would hope, and you have not been the only one, but that has been an interesting turnabout with the regents, their activity in committee and with members. And I encourage that in the future, too.
I consider it my duty. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, members, I'm going to make a series of motions, and there may be discussion, but my first motion is to move that House file, and again, the number 5,299, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So that's the motion before the body. I am then going to move the DE1 amendment, which we have already gone through. So discussion to the DE1 amendment we've already had, but if you have further discussion. Seeing none, then all those in favor of the D, wait a second. We need to amend the DE. So my next motion would be to move the A2 amendment, and we'll have an explanation of the A2 from nonpartisan.
Mr. Chair and members, so this amendment deletes the unnecessary new appropriation for the ALS research money to OHE. All the changes that we need for that money are now just in Section 5.
So all those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. A2 is amendment. And then Representative Coulter, you have the
A3. Excuse me. The 3A1.
Okay, that's sorry. It's the A1 amendment. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So Representative Colton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amends the language that we heard in Tuesday from House File 3887. It does two things. It just adds further clarity around the use of the stipends, and then requires a report. on the use of the funds, and that is the extent of the amendment.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative, I think Scott was first to raise her hand. So Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to thank Representative Clarity for working on an amendment that addresses some of the issues that we discussed 2 days ago. So thank you.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Coulter, for making some of these changes. I just want to clarify, so on page 7, line 14, you are deleting parenting students and now saying the stipends are going to campuses and Head Start centers. So students are not getting any stipends. Is that correct?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins, for the question. In further discussion with the folks at the National Partnership that have worked on this, what they have sort of traditionally used these stipends for, as is explained in the amendment, is to support the formation of these advisory panels to gather feedback and sort of discuss the specific needs of what these partnerships might entail. And that can mean a variety of things in terms of the arrangements of those panels, refreshments, space needs, that sort of thing. I would imagine that that could potentially include some form of compensation for students' time, since we are talking about parenting students and folks who have very little extra time as it is. But I think this language better reflects sort of the intent of what the stipends are for.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I do think it was not clear the other day. I think the testifier herself thought maybe she was getting help with childcare, and that is not what this does. And I just have to say I'm very disappointed to see the committee spending our target on this. Campuses clearly already have formed partnerships with Head Start. They've had the ability to do it, they have the freedom to do it, and to spend our target on this sort of creating another layer of bureaucracy when there are so many needs out there, I'm very disappointed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To your motion, Representative. Any further, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Scott.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I forgot about a question I was gonna ask. And first of all, I wanna say sorry, I got your last name wrong, Representative Coulter, I said Clarity, I think. And this question is to the author of the amendment and the overall bill. Have you worked with Minnesota Head Start on this bill?
Representative Coulter.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Coulter, did it originate with them, or did you reach out to the national level first and then to the state, or how did that work?
Representative Coulter.
So this partnership exists between, sorry, these microphones are like extra loud this morning. The partnership exists between the Association of Community College Trustees and National Head Start. In putting together this language, I did personally consult with Minnesota Head Start as well as National Head Start.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, Representative Coulter, if you could remind us how many daycares are already set up on college campuses from in-state.
Representative Coulter.
If I could clarify, are you asking about Head Start centers or child care centers more broadly at Minnesota State?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we have both, I thought we only had Head Start, but if we have both, what would be any daycare center on one of our college's campuses at Minn-State? How many do we already have out of our 57 campuses?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could not tell you the number of child care centers that exist at any and all Minnesota State campuses across the state. If you will give me one moment, I believe there are.
Representative Coulter, we may have some assistance in the audience.
I wonder if someone from Minnesota State could answer that. I believe there are four existing Head Start partnerships at community colleges around the state.
So Representative Rarick and Representative Coulter, if we could get a distinction between the number of Head Start and then the number of daycare centers total would be, I think, interesting. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski and members of the committee. My name is Paul Shepard. I serve as the Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management for the Minnesota State System. According to the information that we received from our colleges and universities, Representative Coulter is correct. We have four colleges that currently have partnerships with Head Start. Overall, we have 13 colleges and universities that have some form of child care center on campus. The models and the staffing and the structure vary greatly across those 13.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier then, so if we have 13 and four of them are Head Start, do you see, and we're doing an expansion of Head Start specifically, do you see that this is a better facility or it serves the needs of students better? Do you see a distinction? I'm just trying to understand why we're specifically choosing this model as opposed to let some of your campuses choose what kind of model fits them best.
Vice Chancellor Shepard.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Rarick, I don't know that I'm in a great position to speak to that specifically. The models range greatly across our system. A lot of the partnerships that exist were generated at the campus level, so I don't know that I'm in a great position to evaluate that, unfortunately.
Representative Rarick, I'm going to repeat what I said the other day. Every time I have seen campuses make an expansion on campus, there has been a discussion about including daycare centers. And Winona State was the one I was involved with that became one of the premier daycare centers. So when we were looking at doing any type of an expansion, the inclusion of a daycare center was considered. That's one of the reasons why this committee has to be linked to capital investment. When we're looking at new buildings being built or old buildings being renovated, the idea that if there is the possibility of a daycare center, that discussion should be made, and if it isn't being pushed by the campus, it should be pushed by us, because that is a critical component now of higher education. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate that, and I just wanted to get a full understanding, since we had quite a discussion, but very little answers, unfortunately, when we had the bill in front of us, and and this amendment is in response to a lot of questions that we had. But I have even more, because we're spending $500,000 basically for staff to expand. And they obviously have been able to, Mr. Chair, in 13 locations, create their own daycare center, whether it was Head Start or other. Only four of those 13 are actually Head Start. So I'm just trying to understand, why are we choosing the Head Start path as opposed to a more broader choice of letting the campus decide what's best for them? And so that's the information I'm trying to get drilled down to, as to why we're choosing this very narrow path. Again, that there are four out of 13 that are Head Start specific. And so I'm just trying to understand why this is a policy choice, Mr. Chair. So I'm trying to understand the policy choice, and hopefully we have somebody that can answer or maybe even the author of the amendment and the author of the underlying bill has a discussion as to why we're choosing this particular path.
Representative Coulter, do you have an answer?
I can try, Mr. Chair. I would say that what the purpose of the bill is to really provide opportunities for community colleges to explore a potential partnership with Head Start. It does not require anyone to establish anything. It does not require anyone to engage in any kind of partnership with Head Start. What it does is allow campuses to explore that possibility. Four existing campuses have already chosen to go that direction. Others have not, or maybe not realized what the potential positives and negatives of such a partnership may be. So this just allows folks to explore what the options are as far as a partnership with Head Start.
Representative Rare, when we toured the campuses and we looked at the daycare centers, the diversity of the daycare centers was what impressed me the most. What also impressed me was it was a campus-based decision. It was not a system decision. It was a campus-based decision on partly the facility, but also the type of daycare center that could be used. I'm hopeful that the campus-based approach will continue here, and we may not get a generic answer as to how this is going to work. The campus may decide to go Head Start, maybe they won't. But I would hope the campus would make the decision that they would need a daycare center. I'm not going to repeat all of the details we had when we traveled, but the fact remains, if this committee does not link itself to capital investment and start going campus by campus, we're going to have problems both on the programmatic side and on the capital side in the future, because we still don't have these campuses up to capacity with enrollment, and we have critical needs such as daycare that have to be addressed. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate that. I'm just trying to understand the language in front of us is specific to Head Start. And I know when we started this discussion, we weren't even sure if it was early Head Start that was included or Head Start, the old. So Head Start in and of itself is 4 and 5 year olds. Early Head Start is 0 to 3. And so we've had a lot of conversation around this, more questions than answers. And I feel like, again, now we're kind of more questions than answers. I'm wondering if the test fire could let us know, is this something that Minn State brought forward, and is something that Minn State is looking for, or did this idea and language come from someplace else?
Vice Chancellor Shepard.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Rarick, this is an existing, to my understanding, partnership. So this was something that we were aware of. We've collaborated with the Office of Higher Education. I think the original idea originated with them. But we've partnered on various basic needs related initiatives in the past.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, again, we're spending, thank you, I don't have any further questions for the test for it. You know, we're spending $500,000 on staff to coordinate things as opposed to, I don't know, maybe we could give $250,000 to one of the campuses with the highest need to actually just start one.
I'd like to be removed from your mailing list. What are
you doing? Representative Davids is working. Was an interesting segue, though. Representative Rarick.
Wonderful. So that's all I have to say about this, because now I've lost my train of thought. So I'll end it there, and then I'll have some more comments when we're all done before we adjourn, Mr. Chair.
All right, we're still on the Coulter Amendment, I believe. So any further discussion to the Coulter Amendment? All right, all those in favor of the Coulter Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We are then on the DE1 Amendment as adopted. So I'm going to move the DE1 Amendment as adopted. Any discussion to the DE1 Amendment as adopted? Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we have some folks in the audience that I see that they didn't sign up to testify, but it might be important for the committee to just hear briefly the change in Section 1, we're increasing the bond ability, and I'm just wondering if we could just hear ever so briefly from, we've got the director here.
Who wishes to come up and testify on that? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Barry Fick. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority. As was mentioned earlier in the session, we are a state agency that receives no state support. We are fully self-funded, and the bonds that we issue are not in any way, shape, or form an obligation of the state of Minnesota. Due to the success of our efforts and our ability to get low-cost tax-exempt financing for our borrowers, we are requesting an increase in our total capacity of outstanding debt from $1.3 billion to $2 billion. That's because we have, as I mentioned, success we have had puts us very close to our current limit. And if we have, which we do have additional requests from colleges for capital projects to enhance their education delivery and student life experiences on campus, we will need to have an expansion of our ability to fund those. And this is strictly only for higher education projects at private colleges within the state of Minnesota.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, because we did hear this last year, I believe. So it's nice to get a little refresher so that we know what we're doing. It's a very small bill, so it's nice to hear the full testimony of the full bill. I'm 100% in support of this provision. I think that this is a great way to support our private colleges with no state money. So I'm very supportive of this part of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Right. Chair.
And Representative Burke, did you have anyone else you wanted to have come up?
I do not. I think we kind of vetted the rest of it, Mr. Chair. That was the only thing. I don't know unless somebody has a question about the ALS, but I believe that's a pretty
All right.
standard
And I believe we have someone from the Office of Higher Ed that can come and address. Yep. Representative Robbins had a question. We may have an answer to your question.
Oh, thank you.
So, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski. My name is Betsy Talbot. I'm the Manager of Institutional Registration and Licensing for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, which is just a fancy way of saying that I authorize the colleges in the state.
And can you address the concern that Representative Robbins? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'll just restate the questions that you were here. So my concern is about how these renewal fees are going to be applied. So I've been in different conversations with different testifiers over the last couple weeks. So does the fee apply only to situations where new applications or renewals are submitted that are not properly submitted or are not complete? Or if so, to phrase it another way, if someone sends in a fully completed complete application but you have follow-up questions, could they get dinged and have to pay the fee for that?
Manager Talbot.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Robbins, it depends. That's why it's kind of a combination of both. So partly it is designed to deal with institutions who I like to say violate the 80-20 rule. So you have 20% of the institutions who take up 80% of your time. So we do have some issues with institutions who ask the same question many, many times, just trying to get a different answer, which does take quite a bit amount of time of our staff. Or when we have issues with institutions with lack of administrative capability, which is one of the standards. And so this is when an institution doesn't understand the questions that they're being asked that we would typically expect an institution of this caliber to understand. And so allowing us to track those types of administrative issues help, and then applying these fees is a method for us to be able to track those types of administrative capability issues that put an institution at risk for closure or the inability to carry out their academic program successfully. So it's really not designed to be punitive to institutions. It's designed to be an interim measure for institutions who are lacking that capability, lacking the ability to complete their application in time, or the lack of ability to follow instructions or work with our staff after they receive a lot of one-on-one time. We do have staff that really, like we do conference calls and we really try to work with these institutions, but then it becomes, when is it a them problem and not a problem of all of our other institutions where they would like us to process their application in a timely fashion?
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. That is really helpful. So just a quick follow-up. So it seems like, based on how you described it, maybe a lot of the problems are more with initial applications than renewals. Do you see a differential there? Because if people have been renewing for years and years, I'm assuming it's a different set of issues, maybe, or do you not notice a difference?
Manager Talbot.
Representative Chair Pulaski, Representative Robbins. It really depends on the institution. We do have institutions, as many of you know, are lacking resources, and they are looking for ways to cut staff. It's one of the red flags of a potential school closure, and they stop properly sourcing and funding and resourcing their compliance departments, which includes state authorization. So there are times where we have had years of ongoing relationships with an institution, and all of a sudden they have these problems. That's normal in the first couple of years of having a new staff person. But how do we handle situations with an established institution that year after year they have a new individual in the state compliance department, and every year we have to spend hours and hours and hours training their state compliance individuals because they are not properly resourcing their staff, which again, in turn, penalizes our institutions who do have their application materials in correctly, in a timely basis, follow instructions, and they're waiting to have their applications reviewed while we handle these institutions that are not properly resourcing this requirement.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate that. And one of the things I had asked previously was, you know, is there a body of sort of instructions or policy guides that you hand out for the initial application and for the renewal process so that there's a standard set of expectations? And if they get through all that, you know, they're pretty in the clear. And if there is such a body of documents, could you send that to me?
Manager Talbert.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Robbins, it sort of. When we have one program that really is lacking that documentation of any kind, what we do have is an administrative assistant who thankfully is willing and able at this time, again, it's a resource issue, to walk people through these questions and application materials. For specific portions of the application for that program that are very problematic, I have written kind of little guides for those, like bonds. Institutions like to get bonds filled out incorrectly all the time. For the other one, we have an online database application system called MnSAS, and the developers created guides on how to use that system, which also goes through the application materials. It doesn't necessarily explain like what's required, but how to do it. And then we tried to plain language the questions as much as possible. And then if they do fill it out wrong, it's super nice because if they have a question, there's a feedback box right underneath it, and then we can just submit the feedback directly for that specific issue. And so we would love to have more detailed guides on our requirements, but staffing and resourcing has always been an issue for that. It would be really great because then we could, you know, it's like when you have to put a lot of labor in up front to save you labor in the end, and we don't even have enough resources to do that.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm almost done. That's super helpful. So, for example, in that little feedback box you talked about, would that count as one of those four interactions, or is that just part of submitting a completed application?
Manager Talbert.
That's why we tried to put the word initial in. So if we are like, look, this, like you uploaded your organizational chart, but you didn't upload your organizational chart with who is in those roles. That's just typical feedback and back and forth. Where the fee is intended is on the third time of me asking for that in the same feedback box. This is really when we're going to start tracking you and communicating with you that, you know, we're trying to work with you, work with us, help you situation. And so, yes, we really consider the normal back and forth, just the normal communication about applications. And now we don't have to send long letters and have weeks of delays while they try to match up our letter with their application materials. It's all integrated. And so the hope is that's supposed to streamline it. And if we're supposed to find a trigger maybe on the third time, they'll finally be like, I am uploading it, and then we find out we can't see it. So we really have built in these processes to make sure it's not an us problem. Like we watch them try to upload things to see if it's working or not. But we need to have a better system to manage the institutions who have problems, and the problems are not system-based. They're not clarification-based. They are administrative capability issues.
Representative Robbins.
Last question, I promise, Mr. Chair. So how will you be tracking? Like, when will you be having sort of a system to track it so your staff knows when you get to this point? Like, could you describe how you plan to track these overages, shall we say.
Manager Talbert.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Robbins, not sure yet. That is one of those. I think that you bring up some really great points about tracking. Thankfully, with the electronic application system, there is a feedback history, and it is retained within the system. And so as the manager, I can actually see every single time one of my staff have had to revert back repeatedly because of the way it date stamps it. And so really it is communicating between the three of us, because all of us have a touch point with every application, and communicating is we're having issues. We're past communication issues, and now we need to escalate this file is when we're going to start tracking. And communicating with the institution is that we are going to be tracking this now. I don't expect it to be a surprise. I expect it to be used as a toolkit to notify institutions that they've under-resourced and that, hey, now I am tracking this, and this is where we're at with your tracking. And then we can start communicating with institutions ahead of time that they need to resource this. is that sometimes resourcing is getting private counsel or hiring additional staff, but binding that expertise without asking our office to support that resource gap.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that you will make a good tracking system that's transparent, that everyone understands, so it's not sort of a game of whack-a-mole. And I also hope that there will be an appeals process built in if they feel like they submitted a fully complete application and then other extraneous things come out not tied to the complete application. Thank you.
We have Representative Hicks also.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I wanted to thank the office for sort of identifying that as state employees, there's all the things we do control, and then there's the things that are out of our control. And sometimes we need support when things are out of our control. I know that many of our state employees try really hard to be excellent customer service across the board, whether it be, you know, especially in the Office of Higher Ed. And sometimes we need to be able to know when it's not an us problem. And so I really appreciate this. I think it allows us as a committee then to identify what supports may be needed too. So I just wanted to say thank you for your work on that, and really for you as a manager, what I'm hearing as somebody who's worked under managers before is my staff needs help, and I've come up with a solution to help them. So thank you for that.
Manager Tolbert, this is the first time, I think, before the committee. It isn't? Have you been before the committee before and I missed it somehow? You did a very nice job today. Thank you. It came at a critical time, so much appreciated. Any further questions? Seeing none, then I'm going to move the DE1 amendment as amended be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
Nay.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Then I believe there's discussion to the amendment. This amendment, Representative Wogelman.
Question for you, Mr. Chair. You know, some vice chairs show support for their chairs by throwing a cupcake party. But I thought that considering how much you love bill introductions, that I could best show my support for you by cloning House File 5299 and introducing it as a new bill. Is that how you'd like us to show support for you, Mr. Chair?
Representative Bogomont, I have followed your 100-plus introductions of bills, and I think the best way that you could thank me would be to withdraw about 98 of them.
Staff is like Dan, yeah.
Duly noted, Mr. Chair. No, all jokes aside, as we come to our final moments of this committee, I want to express my heartfelt gratitude for your leadership in this committee and in your many years of service in the legislature. I'm so grateful to have been able to serve for 4 years now as your vice chair, and I'm grateful for the standards that you have set with the work that we've done in this committee, teaching all of us how to, in your words, grab them by the budgets and don't let go. The work that has come out of that throughout all of your years in the legislature and also in the work that's been done in this committee will have an impact on Minnesota's colleges, universities, and workforce for decades to come. And again, I just want to say how lucky we are as a state of Minnesota to have had your service, how fortunate each of us have been to have the opportunity to serve with you. And even though you will be leaving the legislature at the end of this year, the lessons that you have taught us, the standards that you have set, the example that you've shown will be a benefit to Minnesotans, continue to be for decades to come. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I ask for members' support for the passage of House File 5299 as amended.
Thank you, Representative Wilkman. Representative Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a few comments after the bill's out of here.
All right. Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had planned to speak a little bit more to the Kids on Campus initiative piece, but in lieu of that, I would just direct members' attention to an NPR article that came out, that was actually just came out today, citing specific issues around parenting students and referencing this participation in this partnership as an example of ways of addressing that. Really, though, I just want to echo Representative Wolgamott and thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work On a personal level, as the son of someone who taught at a community college for 39 years, and as a first-term member, it means a lot. And I guess I'll just leave it there.
Thank you. Any further discussion to Representative Rare?
Just really quickly, a procedural question. So I know we had talked briefly that you were going to try to align this kind of with the Senate, and just wondering if you were able to accomplish that, or are we going to be having a conference?
Representative Rarica, the alignment unfortunately failed, so we'll probably have to have a conference committee. I am hopeful it will be brief. So if we could get this done in one conference committee, that might be the possible outcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sometimes the Senate's difficult to work with. And
Representative Rarick, I think you know better than anyone else. All right. Any further discussion to the motion to adopt the amendment? No, we've adopted the amendment. So my next motion would be to move that House File 5,299 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And any discussion to that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Knorr.
I'm assuming it says amended.
I said as amended, I believe. Didn't I or didn't I?
You did.
No, I didn't. Then as amended. Thank you. So as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment or the bill as amended is on its way. So there was Representative David. You wanted to say something.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And If anyone wants to get off my mailing list, just let me know.
I'll be the first one.
32 years here, first term on higher ed, and Mr. Chair, you did not disappoint. I would certainly like to thank. First of all, I want to back up just a little bit. Thank Roger Moll, Senator, or whatever you are today. It has been great over the years to work with you. You've always been up front and. And we didn't always agree, but we knew where we were at, and I appreciate your service to the state, Mr. Moll. I'd like to thank, I always want to say I'd like to thank the Academy. Wouldn't that be cool? I'd like to thank Lead Rarick and our members and the members on this side of the aisle. Lead Rarick, you're always prepared. You always have the information you need, and a lot of that, I think, is because of staff, some of it. But you do a great job. You did a great job in the higher ed committee here, and I appreciate that. And to Chair Pulowski, you are a great chairman, a great friend. You're a great neighbor, a really good neighbor. And you're just a great person. I just want to wish you and Deb the best in the future.
Representative Davids, I'm reminded of a story where we were in Rushford at the Volunteer Fireman's Breakfast. Mm-hmm. And it came up about the number of bill introductions, and as you usually do, you had your phone at the ready, and you noticed during that session that you had introduced the most bills in the House and that I had introduced the least. And it was an interesting dynamic of which party was introducing the most and the least, at least in our area. But also to notice that the senior members of this body are all from Senate District 26 A and B. I'm the most senior, and Representative Davids is the next senior. And that is from an area called Greater Minnesota. So as a reminder, folks, longevity works in Greater Minnesota.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, this whole seniority thing, when the institution is based on it, I like it a little better every day that goes by. But I do have to, I had a staff person one time said, Mr. Chairman, you have over 100 bills in. Don't you realize that if you have 100 or zero, you still get paid the same? So, just a thought.
Oh, Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, just I'll be brief. It's almost lunchtime, and since we weren't allowed to have any food at the table here, I'm sure we want to get going. But Representative Pulowski, it has been just an honor and privilege to serve with you. And for the selfish reason, because my father was a very good friend of yours and you were of his. And it's been an honor to carry on that tradition and to be in your committees and to watch you as a statesman and a diplomat and a lawmaker and to follow your example. I will take that
with me as a lawmaker until I retire. Hopefully it's not as long as you. But it has been an honor and privilege, and I think you are just an outstanding young man, and we will miss you here in the legislature, and I pray and hope that all of us will follow your practice of good lawmaking and good chairmanship. So with that, an honor and privilege, thank you.
Representative McDonald, every time you talk, I hear your father. Every time. So I know he's watching over us.
Thank you.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for everything you have done for our committee and for the institution of the House. I got to know you more when we had the legislature in Winona. That was an incredible experience, still one of the highlights of my three terms here. And I appreciate all you did to organize that and to help the body understand issues of Greater Minnesota in a different way and to understand your community. And as someone who's originally from Crookston, I really value that. And so when I got on higher ed, I was thrilled because I knew the opportunity to learn from you as a chair and as a mentor would even increase. And I have to say, these daily interactions and your leadership of this committee has been exceptional and an incredible learning experience. So I'm very grateful, and I really wish you and your wife all the best. You have made an incredible mark on this state and on this institution, and I know your legacy will continue, and I hope we will all carry it forward as we continue the work without you. But you will be so missed, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins, I believe you got one of the 2019 sweaters from the mini session, didn't you?
I do, and it is my favorite because it's very warm.
And, this is from St. Croix Knits. I do have to plug the company that did it. And they are superior sweaters, so we have two on this side of the aisle, one from 1989 and one from 2019. I have four of them myself, so I rotate through. So thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. So I turned 18 in December of 2001. I wish, 2021. That would be awkward. And so I missed the November election. And then I went off to school at Winona State. And I voted and registered in Winona. And the first election that I was able to vote in, I voted for Chair Pulaski. And so today, it is bittersweet to see you retire. And like a good Greater Minnesota hostess, I do have cupcakes. So we will do that when we're done. But I appreciate your leadership here, and I appreciate the impact you've made on Minnesota, but specifically southeastern Minnesota.
No, thank you. Thank you. Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So before I gush about you, I do want to recognize Regent Farnsworth. And I don't know how many committee hearings, every time I look up, Regent Farnsworth was there. And he's there, he's present, he's paying attention, he's bringing that back to the region board. And I feel like the whole trajectory of our relationship with the U of M has really started with Regent Farnsworth. And I didn't want this moment to go by without giving him my personal gratitude and incredible thanks, because you are present and you are available and you are always willing to have that conversation, good, bad, or ugly, and you're just always there. So, and thank you also for inviting us to come to the Regent Board, and I know several of us have come to Regent meetings as well on Friday, so I just wanted to get that up. But then to you, Mr. Chair, so last session when I was really suffering with my health, I had long COVID just terribly, and Mr. Chair, you are such a kind and thoughtful person, and you are tough in here, but you are just so kind and thoughtful, and I just didn't want this moment to go without publicly thanking you for your thoughts, your gifts, your words of encouragement to me as I was trying to navigate through the one of the worst times of my life, because with me, with the long COVID, my mental capacity was limited, and that is the worst thing that could possibly happen to me. Like, I can be tired, that's fine, but when I'm struggling with my thoughts, that's really difficult. So I just wanted to say thank you for your humanity and your kindness to me personally and the relationship that we've built in our time here, and you will be so missed. And I will carry on your legacy to grab them by the budgets and not let go.
Yes, you will. Good. Thank you,
I also believe in that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I realize that is a very tough illness. We've had friends who have had it, and it's recurring too. And that's what's really nasty about it, that it just doesn't go away. So, but you've managed to prevail, and I know that you'll be here for many more sessions to come. So, members, my final story is a thank you to all of you. But in 97-98, when I chaired for the first time, we did mandate reduction over the interim. We traveled to all of the campuses. We put together a bill, and the governor was Arne Carlson. So there was a Republican governor, and you had Democrats working with a Republican governor. And we passed a series of, I thought, extraordinary things that pushed the decision-making back to the campus. And I'm reminded of that with the daycare centers. Let the campuses decide the daycare centers. But I want to tell you, as a result of those mandate reductions, there's only one that has survived over the decades. And it is the ability of a campus to close itself on account of weather. So I would hope in the future that when you're doing all of your work, that mandate reduction means you have to go out to the campuses and you have to find out what the campuses do best without being told by the system office to do it. And I know the system office is more than willing, aren't they, Chair Mo, to help those campuses make the decisions they need to make locally. So I'll have a personal thank yous to all of you, including our staff here, who have been tremendous. And Representative Davids, when I go, you are the senior member, so there may have to be a behavioral change. But this is a warning. So with that, members, meeting is adjourned.